I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Big K Morning Show. Larry Richard with anchorman Paul Rasmussen, and we welcome back Dan Diggins, who is an expert in aviation on many, many levels as a pilot, former air traffic controller, aviation investigator, and chair and vice mayor of Holmes Beach down there near Bradenton, Florida. Dan, welcome back. Appreciate it.
Okay. Good morning, Larry.
Two things we want to discuss with you this morning. First, if we may ask about the UPS crash investigation process after that horrific fire with that fully loaded jet headed out of Louisville to Hawaii. This process takes a while, but it's really rare for an engine to fall off a jet on takeoff.
Yes, it is. Unfortunately, this type airplane has a tragic history of having the left engine fall off back in 1979 out of Chicago, American Airlines Flight 191, which is a DC-10, which was the passenger version of the MD-11, same basic airframe, different engines and different avionics, but same basic airframe. An engine fell off and killed everybody aboard. That was back in May of 1979. So it's not unprecedented, but it's too early to tell the cause of it. The black boxes have been discovered. They found them. They're in Washington right now being read out. And the flight data recorder will give us a lot of information. And the cockpit voice recorder will tell us what the pilot said and how they reacted to the events that unfolded.
Dan, usually how many months does it take for the NTSB to wrap up an investigation like this?
Oh, this one will take at least 2 years.
Someone might say, Dan, why 2 years when we have all this video that now with technology, we've seen door cam video, we've seen multiple angles and, mm-hmm. and the fact that it happened so quickly off takeoff, why would it take 2 years?
Well, the cameras and all the video tell you what happened. They don't tell you why it happened. So we don't know if it's some type of a fatigue failure in an engine mount. We don't know if it was a bad maintenance. We don't know if somebody forgot to put something on. Those things take a lot of time. Again, the investigations determine a probable cause why it happened. We clearly know what happened, but the why takes the time.
All right. That said, let's shift gears. Unprecedented. Here we are, day 37 of the government shutdown, and now the FAA is going to cut back on the levels of flight operations. I've never heard of this happening under these circumstances before.
That is true. The problem is there's 160 terminal radar approach controls in the country. There's 20 air route traffic control centers. And there's about 400 towers across the country. The towers control the airplanes on the ground, both landing and taking off and taxiing. The radar approach controls control the traffic around the major airport within about 30 miles, and then the air route traffic control centers control the traffic en route at high altitude. And what happens is each facility is split into sectors, and those sectors are determined by geometry and how many airplanes they can handle at a time. A controller can handle 10 or 20 airplanes at a time, depending upon their phase of flight. And if you don't have enough controllers, then you have to combine these sectors. And instead of looking at a range of 100 miles, now a controller is looking at a range of 200 miles with twice the airplanes. So you have to pull back the number of airplanes in that airspace. So that's probably the simplest way to say why we're cutting this traffic.
Well, Dan, some people would say, why is this such a big deal? I mean, airplanes fly so far apart at altitude, but I guess that there's this factor of speed comes into play.
Yeah, it's a four-dimensional game, latitude, longitude, altitude, and time. And they're doing 500 to 600 miles an hour. So time is not your friend when they're going that fast. So decisions have to be made quickly because airplanes just can't move that fast. They're not fighter jets. And you have to control the volume of traffic in a given airspace. And that's what ground delay programs do. Ground delay programs are probably the most effective thing, because if you, most airports use a runway for a landing and another runway for departures. And if you only have one runway that's available for landing and they're 2 miles apart, 3 miles apart on final, that means you can land 30 airplanes an hour. But if there's 60 airplanes scheduled for that airport, you can only land 30, then you have to keep 30 on the ground and kick them into the next hour and then the next hour, and that compounds throughout the day. That's called a ground delay program. And then a ground stop is you just stop all the flights going to, say, Chicago or Pittsburgh or places like that. Anybody departing an airport anywhere in the country going to that airport, they cannot depart, and that's what a ground stop is.
We're with Dan Diggins, aviation expert. That said, you've been a traffic controller. I'm sure you've talked to people that are still doing that. I understand it's a high-stress job, and not getting paid to do it has to take its toll. Clearly, it has.
Yeah, it's a tough job. I enjoyed the job. It was not stressful for me, and a lot of guys, it's not stressful. It's kind of fun. But if you have that mentality, you can handle it pretty well. But it does wear on you. It does wear on you a little bit. And if you're working 6 hour days, 10 hour days, and you're working twice the traffic you normally work, that takes a toll. And then when you go home, you got to try to figure out how to pay bills. So it really is a challenging environment, and I think the controllers have done an outstanding job to actually keep the system going this long.
Dan, I'm curious to know about going back to the ground stop and the delay program you were referring to. Can the FAA order a ground stop at a particular airport? Can controllers say to their superiors, hey, we've got a real problem here. We need to dial this down?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that occurs. That occurs often. Often, and the supervisors are there, and each facility has a traffic management unit that manages the traffic overall, you know, the number of arrivals, number of departures that can operate in an hour, and they institute these programs, and the controller says, okay, no more. Let me clean up what I have in this sector, get them on the ground, and then you can give me some more airplanes. And that happens, but that has a ripple effect, because if you can't take more airplanes in your sector, then they back up in the previous sector, and then it backs up in the previous sector. And then FAA headquarters, the command center gets involved. They're out in Herndon, Virginia. They get involved, and then they institute type ground stops or delay programs to manage the traffic in these sectors. So the biggest problem is when you have to combine positions, and when you combine the positions, there are two different types of frequencies. One position has one VHF frequency, and another position has another VHF frequency. So if the controllers work in both positions, the pilots in one cannot hear the pilots in the other one, so they can't get quite a good mental picture of what's going on in the airspace. So it does have some type of compounding effect of safety.
Fascinating. Really appreciate your time, Dan, and your expertise. Thank you, sir.
Okay, you're welcome. Nice talking to you, Larry.
You too. Dan Diggins, who is an aviation expert.
I'll say.
Yeah, his resume is ridiculous. So
yeah, he sounds exactly like the kind of a person I would want, handling my flight.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Who possibly could be smarter than our own Total Recall Paul? We'll find out. Now, we asked for a Lifeline participant, and from Monroeville, we have Adam. Adam, good morning.
Hey, Lair.
What's your last name, Adam? How do I pronounce that?
It's Sue Metz, like a boy named Sue in the New York Mets.
Oh, nice. Sue Metz. All right, Adam. You know the drill. We're going to have you on standby for me if I can't answer a question or if I need help. But either way, you're going to get a Coons Quality Food $25 gift certificate, all right?
Awesome. Thanks so much.
You like sports?
I've been to some sporting games, so.
Okay, well, this is the category Aaron Ferragoni, our producer, has chosen. So, Aaron, fire away.
Okay. Thanks for being with us, Adam. Paul, you're going to go first. Question number one is just a flat-out answer. During World War II, the Steelers merged with what other NFL team due to player shortages?
The Philadelphia Eagles.
Larry?
The Philadelphia Eagles, they were called the Steagles.
That's right.
Okay, correct. I wasn't sure if you guys would get that one, but the Steagles, can you imagine?
No.
No, not today. We can't.
Yeah. What? Okay. Question number two. Who was the last Pitt football player to win the Heisman Trophy? This is multiple choice. A. Randon Holloway. B. Gordon Jones. Or C. Tony Dorsett.
Tony Dorsett. Oh, I'm sorry.
Tony.
Oh, that's
Dorsett.
Okay.
No, that was too easy. We both. Yeah.
Really?
Adam, you probably got that too, right?
Tony Dorsett.
Yeah.
Correct. Okay. Guys, next week, I'm bringing it hard.
All right. I'm sick of this.
All right. Last question. In what year did Pitt accept the Panther as its official mascot? Larry, or no, Paul, you go first.
In what year? So we have to pick a year.
Yes.
Oh,
and
my.
This is just, it's up to you guys. Since the last two were easy, should I let you answer or give you true or false?
I would say you should have given us at least multiple choices.
I can give you the year. And we'll do true or false, okay?
Okay.
Okay.
Pitt accepted the Panther as its official mascot in 1910. True or false?
I'll go with false.
Larry?
I'm going to say that's false.
Adam?
Adam, what do you think?
I would say false. I think it's 1909.
Wow, Adam.
He was sandbagging, Larry. Yes. He was sandbagging.
He knew sports way more than he gave off.
Wow.
Good
wow.
job, guys.
Either that or he's sitting next to ChatGPT.
With the microphone feature on. Great job, guys.
All right, Adam, thanks again. We appreciate it. And you're going to get a $25 gift certificate from Coons Quality Foods.
Perfect. Thanks, guys.
All right, so that was pretty good, though, Aaron. You had to be impressed with the sporting knowledge overall.
Now,
oh, I'm impressed.
The year I was considering blurting out before you finally capitulated was, I was going to say 1914, so I would have been in the near neighborhood.
Right, yeah.
And why the Panther? That would be the question.
Right.
Of all things.
Yeah, why the Panther? How did that happen?
I think if there was one question that I was like, ooh, are they going to get this? It was the Steagles. I don't know why. Meanwhile, maybe that was the most obvious one.
Well, here I ask AI. It says the University of Pittsburgh officially adopted the Panther as its mascot November 16th, 1909.
Around this time.
Following a suggestion by a graduating student, the choice made by students and alumni, the idea for the mascot came from George M.P. Baird, who was soon to graduate. The Panther was chosen for its connection to the region, noble standing, and alliteration with Pitt.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Which makes sense.
Works
Pitt
for me.
Panther.
It does flow.
The university teams were nicknamed WUPS. W-U-P-S. There you go.
Unique.
Maybe a little more information than you want. I kind of just like Panther as opposed to WUPS.
Yeah.
WUPS!
Right.
Sounds like somebody fumbled.
You know, we'll have to ask Bill Hillgrove a couple of these little questions too, right?
Oh, yeah. Bill did the first basketball game that count to open the season was Monday night.
That's right.
So, Bill, Aaron, how many years has Bill Hillgrove been the play-by-play voice of the Panthers basketball team? Take a guess.
35 years.
We're going to take away your gift certificate.
What is it? I was so confident that I knew.
56.
Dang it.
56 Whoa. Years.
That's amazing. You don't even hear about...
Marathon man.
Yeah, that's unbelievable.
You know how many basketball games he's seen and football games? We're going to talk to Mr. Hillgrove. Hall of Fame broadcaster coming up right after the news with you, Paul.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Top of the hour at 8 o'clock. Bill's been doing it so long, there were Native Americans living in Oakland. Do you have any idea, Aaron? Oh, she's talking to a listener.
Go ahead.
You're talking to Adam. Do you have any idea when the University of Pittsburgh was founded?
No, but here's the thing. If they picked Panther as their mascot in 1909, I'm just going to take a smack and say 1820.
Oh, no. Goes way back.
I'm talking 1790s, maybe?
Yeah. There's a little log cabin on campus that's kind of a, I mean, I don't think they taught out of it, but it goes back that far. University of Pittsburgh, 1787.
Wow.
It was originally known as Pittsburgh Academy. Then it became Western University of Pennsylvania, and then eventually just the University of Pittsburgh. But 1787.
So the takeaway is I have a lot to learn with Pittsburgh sports, and you guys know a wide. You guys know most. I have a lot to learn in that category.
I learned a lot here.
Now, fall coffee, I got that.
Hey, you want to get a category that Larry and I will both flunk out? Just try geometry.
Yeah.
What is the square root of an isosceles triangle?
Crickets.
This is the Big K Morning Show, and every Thursday at this time, we check in with the good Dr. Mike Hutchinson, Animal General, LaSalle Plaza in Cranberry. You can see Doc on our live stream, kdkradio.com, and our KDK Radio YouTube page, presented by Metropolitan Window Company. Today, sporting his Pittsburgh Penguins hat, no doubt for Crosby Ovechkin, the matchup tonight at PPG Paints. Doc, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
Good. We have some questions from our audience, and then we have some questions, including about cloning your dog or pet, I guess, with Tom Brady announcing that he did just that. So you know people who have gone through this process, and we'll get to that. Fascinating. Yeah. We'll start with Tom in Mount Lebanon wants to know, Doc, I heard you speak about winter coats and sweaters for dogs. Does our dog really need a winter coat, or can most pets handle cold walks without one?
Well, you're right. Most normal dogs with normal coats can handle the walk, and they enjoy being outside, and they don't act cold at all. But you'll get some of these tiny breeds like Chihuahuas and senior dogs that are older, and even the short-haired like Greyhounds. If they go outside and you see them shivering or like pit bulls picking up their paws, they're giving you a signal that it's kind of cold. And if you try a sweater or coat, you might find out that they appreciate it. We have the pit bull that will go outside and turn right around and run and come right back in when it's cold out. And when we put a sweater or coat on, that dog's so happy, it's you can tell. So look at their body language, and if they're showing you their coat, try a sweater or coat.
Carol in Beaver wants to know, Dr. Mike, why do vets give Chihuahuas the same amount of a vaccine as a Great Dane? It seems like, to her, it might be over-medicating the little ones.
That's a great question.
It is a great question, and I get that a lot. That's not an uncommon question. Even in the exam room, we get that a lot. So it's not it's not like an anesthesia where you measure body weight and you divide it up and you come up with a dose or a medication. It's stimulating the immune system. And before they can get approved, the amount in that vial, they contain antigens in it, which teach the body how to respond and beat off that disease. And there has to be a minimum amount there for the tiniest of dogs, and that same amount will stimulate the immune system in a Great Dane. So that is what gets approved. If you don't put that in there, you may not get the reaction inside the body to protect them against these bad diseases. And if you put more in there, you don't make them get a stronger immune response. So those are, it's really good science in those. And even the tiniest of dogs will stimulate their immune system, and the biggest dogs, it'll stimulate their immune system. The smaller dogs tend to have more reactions because they have a smaller body. And if you get a degree rise in temperature, say, from stimulating their immune system in a Chihuahua, they're more likely to shiver and act like they're having a reaction, where a bigger dog may just shrug it off. But it's still the right amount in there to stimulate their immune system.
From Imperial, Jeff wants to know, Dr. Mike, I'm looking for a non-surgical procedure to remove a lemon-sized fatty tumor on our 8-year-old lab side. We have already visited a vet, but they said it's nothing to worry about. What do you think?
You know, that's a great question, too. I'm looking for that solution. So we've tried putting them on diets. I've been a vet a long time. We tried injecting them with steroids. We tried injecting them with other things that came out that they thought were going to dissolve these. None of them worked. So if they're movable and soft and small, I agree with your veterinarian, just keep an eye on them. If they get real big or they firm up or they're in a bad area, like under an armpit or somewhere it might obstruct their mechanics or their ability to move around or walk, then I recommend removing them. So unfortunately, we don't have something that's going to make them dissolve. I know they're always working on it. And if they come up with something, I'll be shouting it from the rooftops because I would love to have it too. I had a lab that made it to 16 and a half, and he had 11 lipomas on him at 16 and a half when he died. And I took 7 off during his life. So you don't have to take them all off. They're not malignancies. They don't spread to other areas. It's just that some dogs tend to get more than other dogs. And when they do that, you just have to speak to your vet and decide what's appropriate.
Dr. Mike, real quickly, are there breeds that are more prone for these?
You know, I don't know because we see them on all dogs. We see them on mutts. We see them on pure breeds. I see them on labs a lot. I see them on Rottweilers a lot. I see them on Weimaraners a lot. We don't know. German Shorthair Pointers, I see a lot of them. It just seems to be any breed can get them. People get them. Birds get them. Dogs get them. I don't see many on cats. But when a dog and a person gets them, a diet won't help us get rid of them. In a bird, you can put them on a diet, they'll shrink away. I wish that would happen in dogs. And you can see them on thin dogs, too. They don't have to be fat dogs. My dad's lab is a very thin dog, a thin lab, and he has one on his side as well.
That said, as you are aware, Tom Brady announced that he's an investor in a company that clones pets, one of his own dogs. And you said something that you texted me that I thought was absolutely a brilliant observation, and that is the fact that it's like having a twin separated by time, which I think absolutely makes sense. So you know people that have done this, right?
Yeah, so Viagen was the original company that Tom Brady bought into. A new company bought them out, and Viagen was one that originally did Dolly the Sheep back in Scotland or England, wherever they did that. So this technology has been around a long time. We used to take skin biopsies from the dog, 3 or 4 skin biopsies. You'd send that out, and then they'd preserve that for that dog's life if the owners decided they wanted to clone them. But now they can do it with a blood sample, and that's what Brady had announced, that they did it with a blood sample from his dog, and they can preserve that. So you can draw that and preserve it. That costs a certain fee. I think it was around $400. And then you can decide at any point if you want to have that dog cloned. And again, it's a twin separated by time. People will ask me, do they keep the same body markings? They'll have the same exact colors, but they might be in different spots on the body. So if he has a big spot on his middle of his forehead, the clone dog may not have that same black spot on the middle of his forehead or white spot. He may have it somewhere else, but they will have the same colors. So it's kind of interesting.
Well, that said, it really hit close to home this week because we lost, as you know, our dog of 15 years, Kobe.
So sorry.
I want to thank you and your sons. You have an amazing family, and I know, Paul, you've been through this. Everybody's gone through it, I'm sure.
Dr.
Horrible.
Mike's sons and his staff have helped me twice in that spot. Yeah.
That's a tough one for all of us.
And I know you see it more than anybody, actually. And it's probably hard for you to see that last look. And if you're fortunate enough to have that opportunity, sometimes that's not the case. But I just want to thank you and your sons.
You're welcome.
Great
you're welcome.
Sensitivity and really important. So appreciate you.
Well, thank you.
All right. The great Dr. Mike Hutchinson, Animal General. We've got the link at kdkradio.com. And you can go to animalgeneral.net. Thanks, Doc.
You're welcome.
7:45 at KDK from the P.J. Fitzpatrick Home Improvement Traffic Center, powered by Bowser Genesis of Monroeville. Ellen Gamble, what's going on now?
Oh, well, lots of brake lights out there. The Thursday morning commute in full swing, shall we say. Parkway East inbound, that is heavy for you at the Wilkinsburg off-ramp as you make your way to the Squirrel Hill tunnels. Just a quick reminder, folks, today is another steel beam delivery day, so you could have stoppages of up to 15 minutes at a time on the inbound Parkway East between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. This all part of the Commercial Street Bridge project as they bring truckloads of steel beams into that area. But right now, no closures, no stoppages, just the regular brake lights for you there. 28 southbound, heavy through the Aetna bypass, and then stop and go most of the way down past the 31st. the Parkway North, I-279, slow for you between Camp Horn Road and Bellevue Westview. The lineup on the Parkway West begins for you just before the top of Green Tree Hill. Our next AAA traffic on the fives at 7:55. I'm Ellen Gambolo.
10% reduction of flights in 40 high-traffic markets starting Friday. Today, U.S. Airlines announced they expect a record-breaking 31 million passengers over Thanksgiving, but that could be in doubt if the shutdown continues.
So that's CBS's Chris Van Cleve. Pittsburgh and Latrobe are not on the reduction list that we've been able to tell, but it's the connecting airports, Larry. It's the hubs that we all fly to from here that could be on, or they're reportedly on the list.
Well, at least we got that going for us.
Jeez. Is the political strategy to alienate every taxpayer before this thing is resolved? Is that what the game plan is, the end game?
Well, President Trump said yesterday that he blamed the shutdown on what happened on Election Day. And he's probably right. But I think a lot of people, regardless of party affiliation at this point, if you're a family affected by food insecurity, now travel, you don't care whose party, get it done. Fix it.
It's now 12 dead in the crash of a UPS cargo plane in Louisville with the investigation underway.
The NTSB has identified the flight recorders, so that's very good news. We certainly hope that they will have usable data. We know for a fact, I mean, it's been confirmed that the engine did depart the wing, fell off the wing.
We talked to aviation expert Dan Diggins this hour, who said it may take up to 2 years to go through all the details to determine exactly what happened.
And he had a great answer to your question about why can't we get an answer sooner because we have all this video, right? And then he said, well, the video shows you what happened, but it doesn't tell you why.
Great, great point.
And then last night on the Monumental Sports Network.
Lost it there to Ovechkin. Quick relay comes to the point. Chytrin fires. Just missed. Ovechkin turns. He scores! Is the one and only at 900.
900 goals in the National Hockey League. No one has ever achieved that. And guess who's in town? It's a hockey night in Pittsburgh. Sidney Crosby and Alexander Ovechkin with the Caps at PPG Paints Arena.
Should be good.
We're going to talk to Bill Hillgrove coming up right after the news at 8.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.